This podcast of The Exchange is sponsored by
Dartmouth Hitchcock, creating a new model for healthcare where leading health systems collaborate to improve care for all of us. A sustainable system improving the health of our communities for years to come. Information at imagine.d-h.org.
And Northeast Credit Union, helping their members save money through free checking accounts and refinancing of auto, home, and personal loans. Northeast Credit Union, encouraging you to discover the difference at necu.org. Federally insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Opportunity.
And Doucet Survey, serving your professional land surveying and mapping needs in New England, now with offices in New Hampshire and Maine. Information at doucetsurvey.com. That's doucetsurvey.com.
Enjoy the show.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Canoy, and this is The Exchange. The New Hampshire Attorney General recently signed on to a multi-state effort aimed at a popular industry, dietary supplements. In a letter to Congress, 14 states urge federal lawmakers to investigate supplement labeling practices and quality control, and to consider giving the FDA stronger oversight in this area. The effort is led by New York State, where the Attorney General earlier this year released his own investigation. It found that many supplements sold at mainstream retailers like Target or Walgreens did not contain the elements listed on the bottle. Herbs such as echinacea, for example, or ginseng, but did contain fillers like powdered rice or even ground-up houseplants. Supplement producers have called New York's report harassment based on science fiction and have questioned the state's testing methods. But while this debate is ongoing, it's just part of a longer, larger discussion. What benefits do these products have? Which ones show promise and which might be a waste of money? Today in The Exchange, scrutinizing supplements, the hype and the hope. Let's hear from you, The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-6477. NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. For this first part of our hour, we have with us Anahad O'Connor. He's a reporter for the New York Times covering health, fitness, and nutrition. Anahad, great to have you. Thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us, Dr. Paul Offit, professor in the Division of Infectious Diseases and the director of the Vaccine Education Center at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. He's written several books, including Do You Believe in Magic? The Sense and Nonsense of Alternative Medicine. And Dr. Paul Offit, welcome back to The Exchange. Good to have you, too.
Thank you, Laura.
Well, Anahad, I want to spend a couple minutes with you just talking about your reporting on this Attorney's General effort. It started, as I said, with New York's Attorney General unveiling his own investigation into the quality of popular supplements sold at regular places where a lot of people shop. What did the AG find?
So the AG actually went to Walmart, GNC, Target, and another big retailer as well, whose name escapes me at the moment. But there was four big retailers they went to across New York State, and they actually tested a variety of the most popular herbal products on the shelves, so echinacea, St. John's wort, ginseng, ginkgo biloba, and they tested these products using a test called DNA barcoding that looks for DNA from these plants. And in four out of the five products, they found no trace, no genetic trace of these plants whatsoever. But they did find a lot of contaminants, and they found powdered rice and powdered houseplants. They found powdered asparagus. They just found a whole litany of other plants that were not listed on the labels, you know, powdered pine, just some of the most things you would never expect to find in there.
Yeah, the houseplant one really made my eyebrows go up. The fourth store, by the way, and I got this from your reporting on how it is, Walgreens. So here
Walgreens,
I am, you know, going to Target and I feel a cold coming on. I grab some echinacea and really I'm just maybe eating a houseplant.
Right, exactly. And these are things that were not listed on the labels. And, you know, there had long been a lot of evidence suggesting that there was a lot of mislabeling going on in this industry, that, you know, companies were cutting corners and, you know, using cheap fillers, allowing contaminants to slip in there. There were things that were allergens, like soybeans, peanuts, other things that could, you know, wheat, even on bottles that said, you know, gluten-free. So the labels were completely not matching up with what was in the bottles. And, you know, this raised a lot of concerns because obviously consumers, you know, felt a lot of outrage and also, there's long been concerns that, you know, the laws on dietary supplements are far too weak because of all the special interest lobbying that helped to create them in the first place.
Well, sure. So, I mean, on the one hand, you want to get what you think you're paying for. But if you've got celiac, you really shouldn't touch wheat. And I know at least one little boy who has a very serious peanut allergy. So there's some safety concerns there. You mentioned outrage, Anahad. I mean, how surprising was this for most people?
Oh, I think for a lot of people, this was sort of confirmed their worst nightmares when they buy a supplement, which is, you know, many people don't know how weak the laws really are that regulate these products. It's a very loosely regulated industry. And so you're essentially placing your faith in the hands of the companies that make these products, and you want to trust and believe that they are, you know, producing quality products. Unfortunately, this system as it works now, these companies are essentially allowed to operate on the honor code. You know, there's not a lot of oversight. There's something like over 65,000 dietary supplements on the market. There's about 1,500 companies at least producing these products, but we don't even know for sure. And so there's no way that the FDA's supplement division can police them all, and that's in combination with the weak regulations and the weak authority that they do have. And so this kind of confirmed for people that that there's a huge problem out there.
Well, and another question for you on this Attorney General investigation, again, Anahad, and then Dr. Offit, I want to bring you in. So the companies responded to this, calling New York's report harassment based on science fiction. And they said, look, DNA testing is not the way to determine that, you know, echinacea or whatever is actually included. They questioned the use of this. What do you think about that? What do you know about that, Anahad, whether DNA testing is indeed or not legit?
Right. So this was actually one of several studies that have used DNA barcoding to reach this result. And the company said that this was a problem because DNA barcoding, their claim is that it's not appropriate for herbal extracts. And they say when you have an echinacea extract, you take the plant and then you process it so heavily and you're extracting very specific chemicals out of the plant, and that there should be no DNA left behind that these tests can detect. And that, you know, certainly sounds like a very reasonable argument, except when you look at the test results, what you see is that in a lot of these bottles, there was no genetic trace of the plant on the label, but they did find DNA from an assortment of other plants. So they found DNA from rice, they found DNA from wheat, they found DNA from asparagus, pine, you name it, just so many other plants. And so, you know, the Attorney General says, well, if this process destroys the DNA, why is it only destroying the DNA of the plant that's on the label? And what the Attorney General's investigation also later found out was that some of these companies are not actually using, parts, are not actually using the actual plants. Some of these companies are using synthetic compounds that they're creating in a lab. You know, they're sort of honing in on what they think are the defining chemicals or alkaloids from the plant, and then they are recreating them synthetically in a lab in some cases.
I see. So it's not the real plant itself. Yeah.
Exactly. So it just raised a lot of questions. And also, you know, what if you're honing in on a specific chemical, you know, what chemical of the echinacea plant defines that plant? When you go to a store and you buy, you know, an herbal pill of echinacea, you know, the company gets to decide, okay, are we going to use the leaves? Are we going to use the stem? You know, which part of the plant are they using? So the DNA, so the AG's office said, you know, this is just a very, there's a lot of issues with this process and consumers need more information and knowledge. So this sort of pulled back the curtain on this process.
Well, and Dr. Offit, I want to bring you in. You know, a lot of people do find benefit from certain herbs or certain vitamins. Does this mean that they shouldn't buy these at all or just buy the really expensive kind or I don't know. What do you pull away from this?
Well, I think they should be wiser consumers. You'd like to think that what you're buying, first of all, is safe and works. There's very little of that in this industry. Very rarely are these products tested for safety or efficacy, and now we're finding they don't even meet a minimum labeling standard, which is to say that what's on the label is what's in the bottle, or that they're held to a manufacturing standard, which is to say they're manufactured under so-called good manufacturing practices. At our hospital, we got to the point where we were so fed up with the industry not responding to our requests for certificates of analyses proving that what's on the label is what's in the bottle, or GMP statements from the companies, that we basically don't allow their use in our hospital anymore. We have the patient sign a waiver. We refuse to give them because we just don't trust that what's on the label is what's in the bottle. So, I think the consumer should be aware that what they think they're getting, they may not be getting. And so, again, first, no harm.
Well, GMP is what again, Dr. Offit?
I'm sorry, good manufacturing practices.
Okay, so, and that's a voluntary system right now.
Well, it's an unregulated industry. It's a shame that it comes to the point that an attorney general's office essentially has to act like the Food and Drug Administration. I mean, it's the Food and Drug Administration, which has been around for about 90 years, that is going to be best at determining, whether or not the companies have met a standard for safety, efficacy, and labeling. It shouldn't have to come to an attorney general's office to do that. But as Anna had said, this industry has been loosed to basically do what they want.
Well, and I might pick up on that thought, an attorney general's office at the state level acting like the Food and Drug Administration. There's a lot more to talk about. But Dr. Offit and Anahad, I also want to share with you an email that just came in from Liz in Londonderry. And this is a question that I had too. So, Liz, thank you. She says, great show. She says, what about my vitamins, D3, B complex, etc.? Are they in the same boat as the herbals or, quote, houseplants? Anahad, I had the same question. Did this attorney general investigation just cover herbs, or did it cover the vitamins that so many of us take?
So this investigation just looked at herbs specifically, but I mean, vitamins have also had similar issues where we have often had instances where people buy a vitamin and what is in the bottle is not what's on the label. I mean, there's been many cases of sickness because this is such an unregulated or loosely regulated industry. I mean, one of the cases that I was reporting on was something that happened in 2013 where a vitamin manufacturer in Long Island produced some B and C vitamins, and there was an outbreak of liver injuries among about 29 or 30 people because the vitamins, it turned out, were tainted with anabolic steroids.
Yikes.
And it took the FDA 6 months, once they were apprised of this, to actually get out a consumer health alert to the public, and then they asked the company to recall the vitamins, and the company refused initially to recall the vitamins. So the FDA had to fight with the company to get these tainted supplements off the market. And so while the AG focused specifically on herbs in this investigation, I mean, there are similar issues with all kinds of supplements, including vitamins.
All right. Well, Anahad O'Connor, I know you have to leave us. Thank you very much for your time. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
That's Anahad O'Connor, reporter for The New York Times, covering health, fitness, and nutrition. Coming up, we'll continue talking with Dr. Paul Offit about supplements and vitamins and some of the new scrutiny that's come out recently. We'll also bring in a nutritionist from UNH. All that plus your questions and comments at 1-800-892-6477. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, recent news reports add new scrutiny to dietary supplements. We're looking at what's been said and some of the research into all the vitamins and herbs that Americans take. Join us 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Joining us from Philadelphia is Dr. Paul Offit, professor in the Division of Infectious Diseases and director of the Vaccine Education Center at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. One of Dr. Offit's many books is Do You Believe in Magic? The Sense and Nonsense of Alternative Medicine. And joining us now on the phone is Jesse Morell, lecturer in the Department of Nutrition at UNH. And Jesse Morell, welcome to The Exchange. Good to have you.
Thank you so much for the invitation.
Well, we spent some time in our first segment talking about herbal supplements more, Jesse. Let's talk about vitamins. Just a couple questions, real basic. What are they for? How do they help us?
Sure. Well, most people, when they think about vitamins or vitamins and minerals, they think of these magic substances in the foods that they eat, and they are essential nutrients. They're chemicals in the foods that we eat that provide, a variety of roles in health and metabolism, help us to grow, reproduce, help us, make up who we are. they're essential parts of our diet that, you know, we would like people to think about and try to make the best healthy choices to increase their intake of those.
And deficiencies, we've heard about scary diseases a long time ago, scurvy, right? Lack of vitamin C, rickets, lack of vitamin D. Is your average American, though, today with all our fortified foods, Jesse, vitamin deficient?
Well, we're very fortunate. We have there's a lot of healthy food choices or abundance of food choices around us, as we all know. So we certainly don't tend to see those very serious extreme cases of deficiency that we did 100 years ago. Certainly there are some key nutrients that people don't always tend to, you know, meet the mark for, especially for women and young children. Things like iron tend to be lower than we would like. So making the right choices and looking at foods that are, like you mentioned, fortified could be great ways to make sure that they're getting enough to support their health and well-being.
And is it possible with vitamins, Jesse, to have too much of a good thing? Can you overdose on vitamins?
Sure.
Can you make yourself sick with vitamins?
Absolutely. Again, we're lucky that it doesn't happen all that often, but excesses can cause serious illness, including even death, although that is very unlikely, especially when we limit pretty much almost impossible if we're getting our vitamins and minerals from food sources.
You know, I have another question for you, Jesse, about meeting the mark. And I'm guessing you're talking about the RDAs, right? Recommended daily allowances. I have heard that those vary widely from person to person, that to the point where they're almost useless. I wonder what you think.
Well, I try not to scare away people by using those acronyms sometimes, the RDA, DRIs. They tend to make people gloss over a little bit. There are a variety of recommendations we have for certain people, depending on where they are in their life cycle, if they're a young person or an older person. So they can be confusing, and that's why for certain individuals who have certain health concerns or specific needs, you know, working with a dietitian or a health provider can make it a little less intimidating or overwhelming. Most healthy individuals can use things like a food label that is a little bit more approachable and a tool that is more generalizable to, all of us out there.
Dr. Offit, you talked earlier about your skepticism concerning the use of vitamins and herbs, given that there really isn't any regulation of the promises made or the quantities made on the package. But some people feel like, especially with your regular old multivitamin, hey, can't hurt, might help. What do you think, Dr. Offit?
Well, I think multivitamins probably don't hurt for the most part, but they at least the sort of meta-analyses, these large studies that have looked at this have found, is that it probably doesn't help. I mean, there's no evidence that you need to take multivitamins to make you healthier. As Jesse said, you can get what you need in foods, and I think it just makes for a lot of expensive urine. The problem comes, I think, then so there was recently a paper in the Journal of the American Medical Association, so-called Pediatrics, which showed that some of what are called multivitamins actually can be megavitamins, which is to say that they contain quantities in excess and sometimes vastly in excess of what is the so-called recommended daily allowance. And I think, the data are pretty clear that megavitamins, which is to say vitamins like vitamins A or E or an A precursor like beta-carotene, can actually give you so much in the way of antioxidants that it shifts the balance away from oxidation. And oxidation is important to do things like kill new cancer cells. There are a number of studies that show that you can increase your risk of cancer and increase your risk of heart disease by taking megavitamins. And I think that's something that were this a regulated industry, would be much clearer. I mean, there are a number of studies showing that these large quantities of vitamin E can actually increase your risk of prostate cancer. I think were this a regulated industry, you would know that, but you don't, because it's not a regulated industry.
So your regular, plain old-fashioned USRDA multivitamin, fine, but some of these newer, like pumped-up megavitamins that we do see, Dr. Offit, there's some concerns there.
Yeah, I mean, if you go to a GNC center and buy the vitamin E, it says on the back, it says 3,333% of the recommended daily allowance.
Wow.
That's 33 times the recommended daily allowance. If you open up that bottle and you pull out this gel cap, it's this brown gel cap that's about half the size of an almond. Almonds are an excellent source of vitamin E. You would have to eat 1,650 almonds to get what's in that one gel cap, and you're not supposed to do that. I mean, the industry sells itself as natural while it does a very unnatural thing. It gives you you quantities that you would never normally take, and I don't think people realize that.
Let's take some calls. Again, the number here in the exchange, 1-800-892-6477. Today in the exchange, we're exploring some of the recent scrutiny of vitamins and supplements. What works? What doesn't? 1-800-892-6477 is the number for you to join us with your questions, comments, concerns. 1-800-892-6477. And Jesse and Dr. Offit, let's go to our callers. Cindy's joining us from Brattleboro. Hi, Cindy. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm an herbalist up here in Brattleboro, and we've been saying for decades that you really shouldn't take the kind of herbs that are sold in these big box stores that you mentioned.
Uh-huh.
And I was so grateful to hear that that's been exposed. And, you know, it just doesn't surprise any of us that there was no herbal material found in those main products that were in the study. And I wanted to make a couple points. Like the thing Dr. Offit was just saying about vitamins, we really want our vitamins to come from food because we get all the cofactors that help those vitamins work in the body. And iron and calcium are both good examples. If you take calcium pills, really what you're getting is chalk. And chalk doesn't work in the body. It actually can cause more osteoporosis.
Wow. So get your vitamins from food, which I've definitely heard before. Cindy, I have a question for you. Since you're an herbalist, how do you guarantee for your customers that the herbs that you sell actually are what they say they are?
I don't really sell. I teach.
Okay.
And what I teach is that we should be getting our food, our nutrients from food. We've now learned in we've now learned that there's micronutrients. There's actually millions of them that the body needs to really run efficiently. And that's not taught yet in nutrition courses. You know, we learn the vitamins and minerals, but we need so much more than what we really understood until the last 10 or 15 years.
You know, Cindy, this is a great point. And Jesse Morrell, I did want to ask you that. Everybody says get your vitamins from food. Go ahead, and then I have another question for you.
So, sure, we definitely want to teach our students here at UNH or my kids at home or the people that I interact with that, you know, you can really meet your nutrient needs through a well-balanced, diverse diet. We want, you know, individuals to think about a variety of food sources, a more plant-based diet than most Americans consume. Not only are they going to get the vitamins and minerals that we're talking about here, but other parts of the diet like fiber and whole grains that is much, you know, it's a challenging part for a lot of Americans to meet that goal.
Well, we all hear get your vitamins from food, but then some people say, okay, but for the next week I'm traveling, I'm on the road, I'm really busy, you know, I don't have time to make a kale and cantaloupe shake in the morning, you know. So why not pop that multivitamin or two to kind of fill in the gaps there?
So I think one thing is that when it comes to the foods that we eat, we don't have to have a perfect diet every single day. None of us are going to eat just perfectly on a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday throughout the week. And that's our body is designed to have a variety in the food choices we have. One of the concerns with the multivitamin, mineral, or supplements is sometimes providing that sense of or false sense of, you know, protection that gives you permission almost not to prioritize healthy food choices.
I'm taking my vitamins, so it doesn't really matter if I'm eating, you know, burgers and fries for breakfast,
correct,
lunch, and dinner.
Correct.
Do you see that, Dr. Offit? From what I hear from most people, and maybe I'm living in a bubble, is that, you know, they eat pretty well, but they take a multi just to be sure. Do some people actually take multis and then feel like they're completely off the hook for eating well?
I think so. I think the industry is clever in that sense, that they appeal to our sense of guilt that we probably aren't eating as well as we should, and also the notion that you can guarantee getting everything you need by simply popping a pill. I mean, it's a pill-based culture, so we're very much attracted to that. But as both Cindy and Jesse have said, the best way to get these nutrients, the best way to get vitamins and minerals is through the food you eat. That's the natural way. But the industry invariably sells itself as natural, even though I would argue much of what they do isn't natural.
Let's take another call. Thank you for that one, Cindy. And this is Jacqueline in Manchester. Hi, Jacqueline. Go ahead. You're on the exchange. Thanks for calling in.
Hi. Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Sure.
So I'm calling in really from two perspectives. One is I'm a naturopathic doctor here in New Hampshire, and I also work for a company called that distributes supplements to healthcare practitioners to use through their office. So I have a couple points, you know, I definitely agree with, and then things I want to challenge a little bit that have been brought up. So first, I love that it's been talked about that the best source of nutrition and vitamins is really from food. Absolutely agree with that. Dr. Offit brought up that the industry is unregulated, and, you know, I think he knows that that's actually not true. The industry is regulated by a law called the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act. The FDA has oversight of, you know, based upon that legislation and has, as you know, put out warning letters to companies that are not following the law as it's written. So, you know, that's one piece. And I would say that within that, there's huge variation in quality within our industry. I oversee the quality for our company and actually get to audit manufacturers. And I see that there are some companies that are doing a great job, and that should be highlighted. You know, some companies actually manufacture to standards that are used in the pharmaceutical industry. So just in kind of in closing there, you know, Dr. Offit's advice to consumers was they should be wiser consumers. And I'd absolutely agree. Consumers should talk with healthcare providers who know how to source good quality, like their medical doctors and naturopathic doctors and nutritionists.
So there are good products out there for sure. Jacqueline, I don't think anybody would disagree with that. But the idea that the industry is regulated, I have also read, Jacqueline, that given the efforts of Orrin Hatch, especially the senator from Utah and longtime supporter of the supplement industry, that the regulations are pretty weak, Jacqueline. I wonder what you think, that it's kind of a self-regulating industry, which, as we've seen in the Target and Walgreens case, isn't really enough. What do you think, Jacqueline?
I don't agree that it's self-regulated. The difference between supplements and drugs, the regulations as far as how to manufacture are actually very similar. But with drugs, it requires pre-approval. And with supplements, it does not require pre-approval to put a product into market. But remember that supplements are regulated as a class of food because they are naturally derived elements, things that already exist in our food system and in nature, compared to pharmaceuticals, which are truly synthetic. And I've worked in that industry as well in drug development, and we really kind of imagine and create and invent new compounds. So they are very, very different, and supplements should not be regulated as drugs.
Okay. Now, that's an interesting point. Jacqueline, thank you very much for calling in. Dr. Offit, what about that? Supplements, herbs, vitamins, they are really food, so should be regulated as such. That's interesting.
Yeah, so here's the way I see it. First of all, I would say 70% of the drugs that we sell, that we have on our formulary at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia are derived from natural products. They're derived from plants and nature. So the notion that so you have pharmaceutical products on one side that are synthetic and then these all-natural products on the other side is, I think, not true. Secondly, in the early 1990s, David Kessler, who was the commissioner of the Food and Drug Administration, and Henry Waxman, who's a Democrat from California, wanted to regulate this industry because they felt that people would walk into a health food store and be given medical advice that was built on sand. And so they introduced legislation to do that. That legislation was defeated by what was then a very powerful and continues to be a very powerful industry, and you're right, headed by people like Orrin Hatch and Tom Harkin. They overturned that legislation, in fact, did exactly the opposite, creating the 1994 Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act, which loosed this industry so that it doesn't have to prove that its products are safe, doesn't have to prove that its products are effective, and frankly, for the most part, doesn't have to meet a labeling standard because the FDA was held at arm's length from doing that. I think in a better world, these products would be held to the same standard of safety, efficacy, and labeling as everything else that we put into our bodies, thinking that they're causing a medical effect. I give this industry credit for being able to sell itself as something that it's not.
Do you want to jump in on this as well, Jesse? Concerns about regulation or lack thereof?
Well, from my experience as an educator, I can see a lot of people that I interact with, whether it's students or individuals who are confused by nutrition information, have a sort of a mediocre understanding of nutrition at best, and with a third to 40% of Americans reporting that they're taking supplements, I certainly would be in the line of wanting more regulation, more oversight. The FDA cannot, you know, weigh in on efficacy and safety before these things are on the market. I think there's a real opportunity for us to make some improvements in improving people's safety and understanding.
Well, Jacqueline, thank you very much for the call. And again, our number 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.com. naturopathic.org. And coming up in a few minutes, actually, we'll talk to a naturopathic doctor who's been practicing in Plymouth for 30 years. So stay with us for that. Here's an email from Angie. I want to share this with both of you, see what you think. She says, I'm a busy, single, working mom in grad school. I don't have time to spend hours figuring out the right vitamin / food combo. Do you have any recommendations for websites with meal planning for vitamin and nutrient health? Angie, I love this email because, you know, I hear you. We're all busy, Jesse. It's, you know, it's one thing to say, yeah, kale has this vitamin and that vitamin. But, you know, it's tough to figure it all out when you're, as Angie, a single working mom in grad school. What do you think, Jesse?
I couldn't agree with her more. It's very challenging for so many of us. We're so busy, whether we're doing the single parent thing or working a couple jobs or trying to get our kids on the run to eat healthy. I think there are an amazing amount of wonderful resources available, free resources that are approachable to all sorts of audiences. Some of them are great right now on the myplate.gov website. Has some great resources for kids or, you know, pregnant moms that I really find very useful and approachable.
Well, and Dr. Offit, I know you have to leave us in about a minute. So last question for you. Where do you find reasonable, trustworthy information? It's hard to know who to trust. You know, some studies are funded by pharmaceutical companies. Some studies are funded by botanical companies. Where do you go for good information?
Well, I think you, in this industry, there's very little in the way of information, frankly. I mean, some things have been studied. So, for example, saw palmetto has been studied to see whether it really does shrink prostates. It doesn't. Concentrated garlic has been studied to see whether or not it does decrease low density lipoprotein, which, you know, puts you at risk for heart disease, and it doesn't. So I think where you do have information, generally you find that these products aren't what they're claimed to be. So they tend to have these sort of wink and nod claims, you know, supports joint health, supports prostate health, supports heart health, because they know they can't make a specific medical claim, even though I think that's how people interpret it. There are people who will take saw palmetto because they're hoping it'll shrink their prostate, when in fact the data, it doesn't support that. I think for the most part, there's a huge absence of data.
Okay. Dr. Offit, sounds like the subject for another show. I know you have to go. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
That's Dr. Paul Offit, professor in the Division of Infectious Diseases and director of the Vaccine Education Center at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. Coming up, Jesse Morell will stay with us, nutritionist at UNH, and we'll talk to a longtime naturopathic doctor in Plymouth. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange on NHPR. Today, we're looking once again at dietary supplements, given the call by 14 attorneys general, including in New Hampshire, for Congress to closer scrutinize the industry. With us for the rest of the hour is Jesse Morell. She's a lecturer in the Department of Nutrition at UNH. And joining us now from Plymouth is David Olarsh. He's a naturopath in practice there for 30 years. David Olarsh, welcome. Good to have you.
Thank you, Laura. Thank you for having me on The Exchange.
Well, it's interesting that you've been in practice there for 30 years, and from what I understand, your dad was a naturopath before you. What changes have you seen, David, in terms of Granite State attitudes and openness towards seeking naturopathic care?
Growing up in a naturopathic doctor household was very interesting, a very different childhood, knowing that white sugar was bad for you and that raw honey was okay, and really having the word organic on your lips all the time, and to see all this go mainstream is really rewarding. And to see people in the Granite State being so open to being treated by doctors who are educated in natural therapies. In fact, our licensing law states right in the beginning that there's a very large demand for this with the residents of New Hampshire, and that we're primary care providers. And it's been very, very rewarding to see the changes in the last 30 years. I was a pioneer in this state, but I have to say that now there's probably 60 or 70 naturopaths, and it's absolutely wonderful.
Well, what do you think's driving the changes? The what's leading more people to seek naturopathic care?
I think the healthcare system is broken. Sometimes I lovingly call it the disease care industry, and people are really sick and tired of not feeling well, of being misdiagnosed or being threatened or intimidated. If you don't take this medicine, you're going to die. That type of thing, and sitting on my side of the desk, I constantly hear from people that the medicines don't work, they don't feel well, they're very frightened of the side effects, and they're coming to the point, I think, where they're realizing that this works, and they've heard from their friends. I go strictly by referral. I don't advertise much, and I'm you know, busy as I want to be. So I think it's about the results, and it's about quality of life, and not just short-term, but long-term.
Well, and we've talked a lot already this hour about the widespread use of vitamins and supplements in America, and the question of whether they might be worth it, when they are, when they aren't. How do you approach this with your patients? Because we heard earlier in the hour about, you know, there are dangers of overdosing. There's a danger of the supplement that you buy may not really be what it says on the label.
Yes.
So I just wonder how you get around this.
I've heard this my whole life, and yet as a physician, I've never seen this happen. I've never seen a patient have an overdose of supplements. So I think, you know, we could talk about how the Ford Pinto was a very dangerous automobile. Does that mean we should ban automobiles, you know? So there are a few supplements that really need to be used judiciously, and that's why people will get the best care by going to someone who is licensed and doctorate-level training in the use of supplements, because there's a world of difference between something you buy off the shelf of a pharmacy versus something that a naturopathic doctor has researched and has studied and knows how to use properly. So in a nutshell, they're actually extremely safe and extremely effective, and especially compared with conventional medicine, it really should be the first line of defense for our health.
Do you test for deficiencies before you assign vitamins? You know, you're not going to give me a higher dose of B12 until you make sure that I'm not already okay with that.
It depends on, you know, you can test for B12, of course, and many other nutrients. Not all nutrients can be tested for. Sometimes you do have to go by deficiency symptoms. So if someone says, you know, I'm having aches or pains, you know, that could be a magnesium deficiency, for instance. So it depends on their finances as well. Sometimes too much testing, you end up really treating the piece of paper instead of the patient. So I treat the whole person and try to take into account not just the leg pains they came to me for, but if they're also having some other thing that might coincidentally back up that, oh, that's also a sign of a deficiency of this or that. So herbalists talk for hundreds of years about something called the doctrine of signatures. And basically, if a remedy is right for someone, it might address three or four issues that they're having in their body, and that's when you feel more comfortable with that being the right remedy for someone. So it's not always just pure science. Sometimes it's art, and it's, you know, the healing arts is what they call it. But, of course, sometimes you're also going to have to use intuition and observation. It's not just pure science.
Let's take a call, if we could, both of you. David Olarsh and Jesse Morrell. The number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Today in the exchange, again, we're taking another look at the use of vitamins and herbal supplements in this country, given new scrutiny of some of these products. And Kate joins us from Brattleboro. Hi, Kate. You're on the exchange. Go ahead.
Hi. My comment is that I heard on NPR about an article in the Journal of Child and Adolescent Psychology recently of a study that they did with giving children who have behavior problems omega-3 vitamins. And according to the article, there was a definite change and an improvement in the behavior of the kids who were getting omega-3s. And my feeling is that often the people who can afford the vitamins are probably not the ones who need them the most. They're the ones who can afford to also eat good food. And the people who live under the poverty level who can't afford good food or are not educated about good food are probably the ones who would benefit the most from good vitamins.
Yeah, Kate, it's a good point. Thank you for calling in. Jesse Morrell, you first. What do you think?
Well, I think that, you know, the population she's talking about, certainly we have lots of, you know, areas that we could try to improve upon, you know, kids or, you know, kids or adults of all ages for that matter, who don't have the resources to eat a healthy diet or, you know, many other different factors that would go into that situation to support their health and learning, et cetera. You know, the research she's mentioned is really interesting and exciting, but it's still, we need more information, I think, before we can really say for sure that omega-3 supplements could play a role in behavior with young children.
You know, Jesse, another question for you on this. She talked about, you know, the importance of how hard it is for some low-income people to eat that well-rounded diet that you talked about before. And both you and Dr. Offit really stressed the importance of eating your vitamins instead of popping them. I hate to keep coming back to this question, but okay, let's say I'm a low-income single mom and maybe I can't afford, you know, the very best of the very best food. So again, why not give my kid an omega-3 supplement or a daily multivitamin just to kind of make sure I've got all my bases covered?
Oh, that's a, you know, I think that it is an individual.
We keep getting back to that, don't we?
Yeah, I think you really have to take a look at the individual situation. As Dr. Olvord said, I mean, it's not a one-size-fits-all. So you really want to think about what are the foods that kids are eating or people are eating and what are the areas of potential concern. So I would not want to say that a one-size-fits-all, that everyone should just be popping a multivitamin mineral supplement, because it can be a waste of money. Resources and, you know, even potentially safety if we're not being careful what we're choosing to buy, you know, at the pharmacy or what have you. So, and there are a lot of wonderful resources out there for individuals who are struggling a little bit with resources, that we can look into and try to address.
You know, David Olarsh, we had a naturopath who called in earlier in the show, Jacqueline in Manchester. She said, yes, of course, the New York Attorney General's office found that the supplements for sale at Walmart or Target had all sorts of fillers and no evidence many times of the actual ingredients. But Jacqueline said, you know, there are great supplements out there that you can trust, basically. But getting to our caller Kate's point, some of the good stuff, quote unquote, is really expensive. So
really is.
Maybe somebody thinks, okay, I can't afford to spend $40 on fish oil. I'm going to buy the cheap stuff at Target.
Right, and the caller Kate brought up some very good points. One of the things I would say to her is you look at what, not necessarily what we're eating, sometimes what we're not eating. A great example of that, fried foods are very high in omega-9s and 12s, and that depletes the omega-3s. And it's true that studies all over the world show that poor people often don't have as much access to healthy foods and therefore have much lower health outcomes. And there's proof right there that what we eat is very important. However, given our food supply, for instance, if you think that eating salmon is good for you, if it's farmed salmon, it really doesn't have the omega-3s in it, and our FDA doesn't alert people to that, and farmed salmon has a chemical dye added to it, all of it, to look like real salmon. Real salmon eats krill and gets the omega-3s and the beautiful color from eating real food, and farmed salmon eats wheat pellets.
And that, and yet it's a lot less expensive.
Yes,
having compared them side by side at the fish counter, so, you know.
Not to get too much into politics, but perhaps if we subsidized organic farms and healthy food instead of subsidizing chemical farms and trying to make everything cheap that way, we have to change our model. I have seen omega-3 supplements do wonders for ADHD and brain issues with children and skin issues. Absolutely wonderful. So you have to find a quality supplement, and usually the quality supplements are worth the money because you can – you get more bang for your buck. You know what I'm saying? You don't have to take the entire bottle to get results. But that's true. Naturopaths do use supplements that are much higher quality, and we get fantastic results. And Dr. Jacqueline in Manchester, has made a very good point about that. So,
all right.
It is difficult to eat well, but it's getting easier and easier, at least in the last 30 years. Even in New Hampshire, we're seeing all these farm stands and more organic farms. So it's getting there.
Let's take another call. This is Reeve in Wolfboro. Hi, Reeve. Go ahead. Thanks for joining us today.
Hi. I wanted to make sure that everybody understood something, that when we're talking about getting food, using food for our nutrition, the biggest growing and safest way to get your nutrients from a tablet or a capsule is food-based, not synthesized nutrition. So companies like New Chapter and Synergy Company and Megafood focus on just food-based nutrition. That I think is one of the missing pieces that I haven't heard discussed enough in this conversation.
So it's a supplement, Reeve, but it's a supplement that draws its elements from food instead of synthetic creation in a lab.
You had a physician on earlier who said that most of the medications in hospitals and used by and drugs are food not food based. They are food derived. He said, which means that we've looked at a plant, synthesized something from it, and made a drug. That's entirely different from what these companies are doing, which is actually condensing some of the plant itself, and basically you're just eating some of the plant.
So you find that more trustworthy than your average,
Walmart vitamin? It's impossible to OD on those because you're eating plants, and the doses of nutrition can be a lot lower, and it is very much more effective. But again, this is, the consumer has to know. I am relieved that this study's come out, because I've tried for decades to say to people, you can't buy your nutrients from a big box store. You have to buy them from small companies with highest quality.
Tough though, Reeve. You know, you do the price comparison, and it's tough on the spur of the moment. You just kind of cross your fingers and go, okay.
I totally understand. I went through a grueling poverty period of a decade in my life, and the only thing I didn't cut back on was quality of nutrition.
Okay. Well, Reeve, good to hear from you. Thank you very much for calling in. 1-800-892-6477 is our number. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And I think Jesse and David Olarsh, Reeve's talking about what we talked about before. You got to buy the good stuff. What do you think, though, David Olarsh, about that investigation in New York into the content of supplements and how there was so little evidence in many of the elements advertised?
Well,
how do you interpret that?
Many studies are done that show different results, and it depends on who's funding it and the studies are done in a way that are designed to show a certain result. And time will show that this test was done to, I would say, for evil purposes. It was done to actually show a negative result. That's not a test that's used by anyone, including the FDA, the DNA test of a plant. They use something called HLPC and other gas chromatography to look at the nutrients that are in the plants, similar to what Sean Connery did in The Medicine Man. He was in the woods and he was analyzing plants, and you look at the values of each nutrient on a device that measures these things. And so this test was set up to show something very negative. And in any field, there's always a few charlatans and there's always a few low-quality things, but overall the supplement field has had an amazing track record. The Poison Control Center said there hasn't been a death from any supplements ever. And you look at the studies, there were over 100,000 people a year die from properly prescribed prescription medications. So the safety record's amazing, and like I said, the only side effects we see in our field are positive side benefits.
Well, Jesse, I want to bring you in on this. You know, and we didn't get a chance to talk to Dr. Offit about this given time constraints, but there is a dark side to sort of standard medicine, the prescriptions. We're seeing in New Hampshire people getting addicted to opioid painkillers. We've done a dozen shows on this topic. It does make me wonder, even with the concerns about, you know, herbs and supplements that some people have expressed this hour, you know, Western medicine isn't looking particularly perfect at this point either. I mean, there's some real side effects.
Well, I think that, all of us have to be advocates for our own health and do our research and, you know, try to reach out to lots of different sources.
Right.
You know, we have different opinions here or different experts on this call that have been really interesting to listen to. And all of us, most well-intended people have, beliefs and biases. So I think you have to, do what you think is, best for you and your family. I would love to, hear from the supplement industry that they are open to more rigorous testing and efficacy, studies of efficacy, so we can, be more confident. So some of the callers have talked about more local products or food-based supplements. I want to see the research. I want to see the evidence that those are safer before I decide to give them to, especially my children or other vulnerable populations, people who are ill, to make sure that they are actually safe, number one, and effective, number two. And I think all, both, Western traditional medicine and alternative or complementary medicine, we all can benefit from more rigorous testing and also, clear communication with our patients and their individuals.
Well, that was going to be my last question for you, Jesse. You know, there's so much research out there, and yet there's so much more that we don't know.
Sure.
So that's what you would like to see in terms of the research. If you could just get a good study tomorrow, that's what you would like to see.
I think it'll never be a study. It'll always have to be many studies, and it is a challenge. Funding is a real challenge for a lot of scientists to do research that's well designed and fair and without any kind of industry bias built in there. That it's a challenge in today's research environment.
Okay, Jesse Morrell, thank you very much for being with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Jesse Morrell, lecturer in the Department of Nutrition at UNH. David Olarsh, it was good to talk to you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Laura.
That's David Olarsh. He's a naturopath. He's been practicing in Plymouth for 30 years. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. The senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producers are Faith Meixel and Jason Moon. Our intern is Dylan Morrill. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord, and I'm Laura Knoy.